making TV special.
Donuts. Made with creamy butter.
And you know what that means.
It's happening. I can feel it.
Yep.
Take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more. Take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more.
Yes, yes, yes. You know, it sounds like hell, but it feels like heaven. Take this job and shove it. Dead Kennedys lead cut from Bedtime for Democracy. But I'm wide awake, and it's morning for Democracy. If you're keeping score, this is the B-side of episode 122 of MediaMonarchy.com, coming in a little bit early to the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, to cram in all the extra news that I know I'm not going to be able to fit into the upcoming 123rd episode. So it's a few minutes after 9 a.m. here on the 15th of May, 2009. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com, the site and the show. Take this job and shove it sets the table quite well, as we even just glance at Google News right now and see that GM is set to cut 1,200 dealers. And I believe I saw Nike cutting 1,200 as well on the front of the Oregonian on my way here to the studio. But turning now to our first post, Econocrash, Currencies, Kaiser, and Financial Conscription. First, from the Huffington Post, local currencies, communities printing their own money. We must note that this isn't something new, and it's even something that a guy named Alan Rosenblith from here in Portland, Oregon, made a documentary called TheMoneyFix.org, and you can check it out. But if we jump to the New York Times, bids to push states' rights falter in the face of stimulus. Standing up for states' rights, as we've noted, states giving a nod to the 10th Amendment. Standing up for states' rights has not been easy this spring, even as many state lawmakers wince at the extended reach of the federal government. With the recession sparing few corners of the country, the $787 billion federal stimulus package has weakened the resolve of states' rights activists in legislatures across the country. Quote, they lay the bait out and we come and take it, said Monty Pierce, Republican state senator who sponsored a sovereignty resolution that passed the Idaho legislature. Then we whine when we've taken it. They lay out the bait, we come take it, and then we whine when we take it. We've heard several times from Max Keiser, maxkeiser.com, K-E-I-S-E-R. He of course, gets more coverage abroad. We've got a clip from France24.com, Max Keiser on the vampire banksters and the corpse of Chrysler.
What exactly is Chapter 11 bankruptcy?
Well,
First of all, before we get to that, let's examine what you just said, which is a very revealing statement. You said that the bankruptcy was approved on some levels, but rejected by the hedge funds in America. Now, why are the hedge funds dictating policy in America? They're complete speculative pools of capital, unregulated, without any oversight from any government agency at all. They're, in fact, rogue agents in the economy. And then they dictate the economy. Hedge funds, they become what I call the divine right of hedge funds. They consider themselves godlike. They obey no one. And here they are slamming all these workers, the Chrysler workers, and all the parts, of course, the companies that supply parts to Chrysler. And the entire auto industry is being completely rearranged by these marauding hedge funds. And what's really pathetic are the American workers. The American workers are pathetic. They don't do anything to defend themselves. They just roll over and take it. America has become a nation of whining crybabies. They refuse to stand up for themselves, and the workers should be given no respect whatsoever. Now, to answer your question, what is Chapter 11? It's a way for...
Did they have no choice but to go for Chapter 11 once the hedge funds decided not to play ball with Barack Obama's proposal?
Well, you know, the hedge funds are saying that they make more money with Chrysler dead than alive, because the hedge funds made bets that Chrysler would collapse. And it's more valuable to them. They make more money if these bets pay off, that Chrysler goes out of business. So they made a bet using credit default swaps that Chrysler goes out of business. They're using this global casino model. So they're really just speculating on the corpses. It's like the people back in, you know, a lot of the brokers who were working in the Twin Towers during the 9/11 incident were actually making bets against airlines exploding. So they were making bets on their own demise. Here, hedge funds are making bets against the demise of Chrysler workers. Yeah. So capitalism is now eating itself in America. It's swallowing itself. It's destroying itself because they're going after the last crumbs on the table as the American economy implodes.
Always amazingly acidic words from Max Kaiser, vampire banksters speculating on the corpse of Chrysler. Max Kaiser, who I now, of course, feel like I can say fairly confidently from what we've heard from Max Kaiser, pretty much a closet 9/11 truther. But if we jump to the CBC, Calgary shelter scans fingerprints of homeless. I could have filed this under Police State International, but here it is under the impending Econo crash. A Calgary shelter is scanning the fingerprints of its homeless clients, citing problems with gang members and drug dealers sneaking into the facility. Dermot Baldwin, head of the Calgary Drop-In Center, said people who had been barred from the shelter use fake ID to get in. This is a private system, internal to us. Out of 187 people, we had 4 people that wanted to know more about it with one serious objection. As we make a quick note of the Fed seeing up to $599 billion in bank losses, that's from the Wall Street Journal. But another bit on the homeless shelter and the growing Obamavilles, tent cities, dead malls. New York City starts charging rent at homeless shelters. This from NBC New York. Even the homeless can't escape the high price of a night in the big Rotten Apple.
New York City's homeless will soon be forced to pay up. City officials will begin charging rent to working families that are staying in public shelters. CNN's Jason Carroll is here now. He's following the story for us. Good morning, Jason.
Yeah, this is a great concern to a number of people. Some families have already gotten notices under their doors saying if they don't pay, they could end up losing their housing. One estimate shows hundreds of homeless working families could be affected by this.
Homeless and living in a shelter, Princess Seaborn is now being forced to do something she never expected.
The city wants me to pay rent. Pay rent being in a shelter.
Princess and her daughter Kenya have been living in this New York City shelter for 6 months. She was told last week she would need to pay $345 a month to continue living there. Money she says she just does not have.
And I try to explain it on my best behalf that I don't have it. And, you know, all I'm getting is pens and paper in my face talking about sign here, sign here. And I refuse to sign.
This new policy is based on a 1997 state law, which requires shelter residents with jobs to use a portion of their earnings to pay rent. The amount varies according to family size and what shelter is being used. So why is the city doing this now? During a 2007 state audit, the city was required to pay back $2.4 million in housing aid that should have been supplemented by homeless families with income. City officials say they're just following the state mandate. CNN was denied an interview request, but was provided with this statement. New York state law and regulation mandate this policy. We were the last jurisdiction in the state to have this policy implemented. Regardless, our objective remains to move families back into their own homes and into the community as quickly as possible. Homeless advocates argue the new policy will actually prolong a person's stay at a shelter.
I think they fundamentally misunderstand in this policy is that money often goes to such things as childcare, which has a direct impact on the ability of folks to leave the shelter system. So when they have childcare, they're able to look for a job, they're able to look for housing. But we're taking that, essentially taking that money away from them.
In the meantime, more of New York's working homeless can expect to start paying rent to stay in shelters, a move Princess says isn't fair, and she's appealing to the state to have her rent voided.
Why should we have to suffer because of the fallback? Because that's what it is, it's a cutback.
Well, New York's mayor defended the policy, telling a local paper, quote, "We're told we have to do it, so we're doing it." Critics of the policy say the city should be taking a lead to get this policy reversed before some homeless families end up back out on the street.
Do they have any leeway here with people who are really in hardship cases? Do you know?
Possibly. I mean, you can always appeal this. That's what Princess is going to be doing. She's going to be going to the state to try to appeal this rent that's been added on to her stay there. That's what other homeless families might be able to do as well.
All right. Jason Carroll for us this morning. Jason, thanks so much.
There's more on that story from the New York Times, as well as print from CNN and Raw story. Another update on America's money machine. More on the original article from Ellen Brown up on globalresearch.ca, Web of Debt. However, from the Times Online, we've got thousands joining the UK army to escape the recession. And we've already seen that here in the North American Union. The army is nearing full strength for the first time in a generation as the recession is prompting thousands of young people to sign up. Recruitment rose by 14% in the 6 months to March 31st compared with a year earlier. An overhaul of recruiting techniques, including internet and television campaigns, and a softening of public opinion towards the armed forces after the unpopular war in Iraq are also helping to boost numbers. Slick propaganda and moving Iraq off the front page apparently has done the trick to beleaguered UK citizens now joining the army to escape the econo crash. The admin wants the Fed to oversee systemic risk. That's from Reuters. However, from Slate.com, of course, a wholly owned subsidiary of the Washington Post company, who, of course, will probably be at the Bilderberg meeting in Greece going on right now. But there's an article on Slate from Elliot Spitzer. If you'll recall, he was the governor of New York and was sunk when a wiretap came out and involved him in a prostitution sting. However, we noted last year, I believe on Valentine's Day, the op-ed he wrote about parasitic speculative banksters that ran in the New York Times. The New York Federal Reserve Bank is the most powerful financial institution you've never heard of. The kerfuffle about current New York Federal Reserve Bank Chairman Stephen Friedman's purchase of some Goldman Sachs stock while the Fed was involved in reviewing major decisions about Goldman's future, for which he was fired, well covered by the Wall Street Journal with links for you, raises a fundamental question about Wall Street's corruption. Just as the millions in AIG bonuses obscured the much more significant issue of the $70 billion-plus in conduit payments authorized by the New York Fed to AIG's counterparties, the smaller issue of Friedman's stock purchases raises very serious issues about the competence and composition of the Federal Reserve of New York, which is the most powerful financial institution most Americans know nothing about. Links in there to Slate and Wikipedia and just general searches and researches for you. However, we do note, and we've made reference to this before from Wikipedia, In the 1995 film Die Hard with a Vengeance, a group of criminals have developed a heist that involves stealing more than $100 billion in gold from the Federal Reserve Bank. How do they do that? By setting off a campaign of fake terror events in New York City that are used as a smokescreen for the real inside job. Losing your job, a blow to your health, too. That's from Time Magazine. Telling you, if you lose your job, you may as well just get sick and die and give up. But lastly, from Money Central, is America about to go broke? This long article, we basically just note that we can maybe deal with 3-4% inflation, but if we start to hit double digits, we perhaps could be more screwed than we'd like to admit to ourselves. The other EconoCrash posting updates, derivatives, threats, and debts. Just a list of headlines for you. We're going to blast right through them. However, we'll kick it off with another clip. It's always sad when you see these clips in Congress when there's really important things and really important hearings, getting things on the record, and you look and there's really no one there. However, we note by way actually of Newsmax that Representative Alan Grayson, Democrat from Florida, was asking Inspector General Elizabeth Coleman of the Federal Reserve some very basic questions about, you know, where the trillions of dollars may have gone. Don't be so shocked. On a good note, however, Ron Paul's recently introduced an audit the Fed bill, which now I think has many, many co-sponsors. I think just a sign of the way things perhaps could be turning. Some of the other headlines on this: EconoCrash updates derivatives, threats, and debts posting. U.S. foreclosures hit record for the second month in a row. That's from Bloomberg. Economist letter says what went wrong. That's from The Telegraph. And there's basically an insider saying you're all a bunch of speculative banksters. FDIC and J.P. Morgan seek ouster of WaMu stakeholder suit. That's right. The Washington Mutual story still goes on. and you got the FDIC and JP Morgan in collusion, again, acting literally as vampire banksters. The corpse of WaMu was worth more to them than a living, functioning body. Hopefully, we're going to get more into that if we can talk to Frank Lordy of RevelationsMedia.com. Hopefully, here pretty soon, of some of the work he's been doing on the Washington Mutual story. Obama releases tax increase playbook. That's for Americans for Taxpayer Relief, ATR.org. Washington State's governor okays tax cut for newspapers. That's from the Seattle Times. Treasury asks for control of derivatives market. That's huge. Sony suffers first annual loss in 14 years. GM and Chrysler to cut up to 3,000 dealers. The secrets of the Federal Reserve from Bob Chapman. Schwarzenegger may release 38,000 prisoners early due to the California budget crunch. Bloomberg noting that a memo from Hank Paulson warned banks to take the aid or be, quote, exposed. GM to export China-built cars to the U.S. And finally, from ABC News, the Carlyle Group settles in pay-to-play scandal probe. If you don't know who the Carlyle Group is, you better check it out. And of course, there's always a Bush hiding behind it. There's an interesting new documentary coming out, and some of the folks in it don't exactly super excite me. But it's important nonetheless, and we note it off with a quick quote from Harry Truman. The only thing new in the world is the history you don't know. Superpower is a well-executed and comprehensive film that asks tough questions and goes behind the scenes of America's national security apparatus and military actions. Far from a conspiracy film about the dangers of government secrets and regime change, this well-balanced film straddles the philosophical divide and allows viewers to understand the quest for global dominance through economic and military strategy that is exposed through review of historical events, personal interviews, and analysis of U.S. foreign policy. Superpower.
The United States emerged from the cinders of World War II with its industrial base still intact and the only country with the atomic bomb. It was, without question, the most powerful nation on Earth.
The U.S. supports democracy if and only if it accords with strategic and economic objectives.
If we look at who is behind, let's say, U.S. Public policy, it's Wall Street.
It's more important to put a dollar in his pocket than what's good for the nation. Ultimately, that's real treason.
We want to believe that our government is not going to lie to us.
Today, the president tries to say, because of the commander-in-chief clause in the Constitution, if I said it's a matter of national security, anything I do is legal. And nobody can touch me on it.
It had to do with the U.S. government going around the Middle East and elsewhere and bombing people, overthrowing governments, supporting dictatorships, suppressing popular social movements, torturing people.
Our actions really do make a difference. And for many peoples throughout the world, our actions in Iraq, the prisoner scandal in Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo and so on have really hurt.
You are violating human rights. And how you can say that we are violating because you're doing the same?
What was done with this unprecedented power, the effects it had on our republic and the rest of the world, is the story of superpower.
That's the quick trailer from the upcoming documentary Superpower, I believe to be available from globalresearch.ca. Swine flu week 3 updates. Of course, a much shorter list as we went through last week, of course, posed with the question, in decline or incubating. We've basically now seen the threats, the threat-aganda from the Center for Disease Creation. Watch out for the fall. Exploitation, human error, and labs. First, from CorbettReport.com, Bilderberg to exploit flu to strengthen world health regulations, and we'll find more out about that as we go on through the next episode. U.S. not out of the woods yet, Obama warns, as flu cases nearly double. Three flu shots, Obama weighing the first ever vaccine increase. That's from the San Francisco Health News Examiner. New flu spreads to Australia, now common in the U.S. That's from Reuters. U.S. records third swine flu death from the Washington Times. Audio and an article from the Washington Post. 1976 swine flu response haunts health officials. And that haunting would be how the vaccine killed more than the flu. The vaccine killed more people than the flu. Fact. Humans and hogs may eat their way to flu resistance. That's from meatpoultry.com. Egypt holiday hell as family quarantined and held at gunpoint. That's from Sky News. Swine flu could hit 1 in 3 from the BBC. Lessons for a biological terrorism event from rightsidenews.com. World Health Org investigates claims that swine flu may be human error. That's from Bloomberg, and that may be one of the original stories on the World Health Organization investigating the claim that this may have been made in a lab. You think? The mutated influenza pig virus story from Global Research. Did the swine flu evolve in a lab? From the Edmonton Sun. Manufactured or the result of human error? That's from InfoWars. And from George Washington's blog, swine flu may have escaped from a laboratory. The last few updates from early this morning, May 15th, 2009. Swine flu updates exploitation, human error, and labs. Fewer than a third in the U.S. would get a swine flu jab. That's from Reuters, showing that, fortunately, most people starting to realize, when I take the shot, I get sick. Number of new influenza patients tops 6,000 worldwide, 65 dead, this according to JapanToday.com. World stands on the brink of biological war. That is from Pravda. New York City closing schools to deal with flu outbreak. That's from the Washington Times. And finally, the Scottish government is going to buy up enough swine flu vaccine for their entire population. That's from DailyRecord.co.uk. That's, of course, not going to be the last we've discussed swine flu. But we're going to swing on over to the new sister site, foodworldorder.com, for a few postings. First, this coming from yesterday, again from Bloomberg. Superfood promoted on Oprah's site and show robs Amazon poor of a staple. Rising U.S. sales of acai, A-C-A-I. You've probably seen that word now showing up on some of your drinks, some of your cereals. It's the A with the C with a little squiggle below it, and an A with the I, and perhaps an Asantegu above the I. Acai. Rising sales of acai, a purple Amazon berry promoted as superfood on Oprah Winfrey's website, are depriving Brazilian jungle dwellers of a protein-rich nutrient they've relied on for generations. U.S. consumers are turning a typical poor people's food into something like a delicacy, said Oscar Nogueira, who specializes in the fruit at Imbrapa, E-M-B-R-A-P-A, Imbrapa, Brazil's agricultural research company. That article goes on, and we also have a clip of a super doctor touting the superfood on the super cult leader Oprah Winfrey's super show. The next one on foodworldorder.com. The Cheerios kid is eating drugs for breakfast. What the hell does that mean? Well, from the AFP, popular U.S. breakfast cereal Cheerios is a drug. At least if the claims made on the label by its manufacturer, General Mills, are anything to go by, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration has said. Based on claims made on your product's label, we have to determine that your Cheerios toasted whole grain oat cereal is promoted for conditions that cause it to be a drug. Cheerios labels claim that eating the cereal can help lower bad cholesterol, a risk factor for coronary heart disease, by 4% in 6 weeks. Citing a clinical study, the product labels also claim that eating 2 servings a day of Cheerios helps to reduce bad cholesterol when eaten as part of a diet low in saturated fat and cholesterol. Those claims indicate that Cheerios, said by General Mills to be the best-selling cereal in the U.S., is intended to be used to lower cholesterol and prevent, lessen, or treat the disease hypercholesterolemia, and to treat and prevent coronary heart disease. Because of these intended uses, the product is a drug, the FDA said. Not only that, but Cheerios is a new drug. I want a new drug because it's not been, quote, recognized as safe and effective for use in preventing or treating hypercholesterolemia or coronary heart disease. That means, this all means, General Mills may not legally market Cheerios unless it applies for approval as a new drug or changes the way it labels the small donut-shaped cereal. General Mills defended the claims on Cheerios packaging, saying in a statement that Cheerios' soluble fiber heart health claim has been FDA approved for 12 years and that its lower your cholesterol 4% in 6 weeks message has been featured on the box for more than 2 years. The FDA's quibble is not about whether Cheerios cereal is good for you, but over how the Cheerios cholesterol-lowering info is presented on the package and the website. We look forward to discussing this with the FDA and to reaching a conclusion. If you go to Cheerios.com, they changed their whole front page and said, you may have heard the recent story about Cheerios being labeled a drug. So there's a lot of information for you to check out, and again, being a huge cereal fan, I find that quite interesting. The last posting from foodworldorder.com, food, formaldehyde, coffee, and Xanax, a quick list of headlines for you. A study out of the University of Barcelona shows that formaldehyde from NutraSweet bonds with human tissue. A funnier note from the Los Angeles Times. A vegan wants "I love tofu" on their license plate, but the state says "too bad." Now, of course, you need to see the spelling. I-L-V-T-O-F-U. So, I love tofu, but you'd probably look at it and it says "I love to fuck." Or "fuck you." Soda tax way to pay for healthcare. That's from the Wall Street Journal. Poverty and food insecurity in the developing world from Global Research. Senator Feingold bill gives all U.S. water to the feds. This is by way of roguegovernment.com. And this would be Senate Bill 787. Fundamentally changing the definition of water. I don't have time to go into it, but there it is for you. Feingold bill gives all U.S. water to the feds. UN treaty expanded by 9 more dangerous chemicals. That's from the New York Times. The Obama-Saya flip-flopping on funding for needle exchange. That's from Alternet. And that will not be the first reversal that we see in today's episodes. The United Nations, eugenics, and the mass media. Shortages stir coffee and sugar prices. That's from the Financial Times. And finally, from MSNBC, test shows chimp in mauling had Xanax. If you recall, several weeks ago, it seemed to be the "when animals attack" meme going on. Of course, kicked off by this attack. And we found out, of course, see, when even you put monkeys on dangerous psychotropic drugs, they'll snap and go on a rampage. Another great documentary piece, this from a show called Backlight. I believe it's out of the Netherlands, and I'm sure we've featured other shows from them. However, I can't remember. It's probably, you know, think of it similarly to a sort of Frontline or some of the other great shows that I can't think of right now. The Truth, according to Wikipedia. Google or Wikipedia, those of us who search online and who doesn't are getting referred more and more to Wikipedia. Over the last 2 years, this free online encyclopedia of the people has been topping the list of the world's most popular websites, but do we really know what we're using? Backlight plunges into the story behind Wikipedia and explores the wonderful world of Web 2.0, but is it a revolution or is it pure hype?
Well, Cult of the Amateur is a current cultural atmosphere in America, and I think also in Western Europe, in which we're idealizing innocence. We're idealizing people who are not skilled in media creation, are not credentialed as academics or experts. It's a cult of innocence which suggests that the less you know, the more you know. It's the idea that kids in particular have important things to say and they need to express themselves. Now, this cult has existed before in history. I think it's perhaps most... It was most dramatically born in the ideas of Jean-Jacques Rousseau and the counter-enlightenment against knowledge and information. What's interesting about today is finally the cultists, the people who believe, who are seduced by the notion of innocence, they found a platform to peddle this innocence, and it's the internet. What the internet does is enable anyone, whatever they know, whatever their technical skills, whatever their education or lack of education, today's internet, what people in Silicon Valley call Web 2.0, allows anyone to express themselves on the internet. So the cult of the amateur has found a home.
I think the problem with instant information is that it allows people to avoid the hard work of forming their own opinions, gathering information, and sifting through it and really reasoning about it. But this isn't a problem just about Wikipedia. It's a problem about the internet, and it's not a problem about the internet actually by itself at all. The internet is great. The absolutely huge amount of information that's available on the internet is a wonderful thing. The problem actually is in us.
I think the internet is often held to another standard. You know, I mean, you don't say, why aren't the newspapers writing about Bismarck? He's more important than Pamela Anderson. You know, I mean, people will make that comment about Wikipedia. It's just complete, BS. So I find, Andrew Keen's, his whole pitch, I think he was just pure and simple looking for an angle to create some controversy and sell a book. I don't think there's any substance whatever to his rants.
The internet is me. I internet. I blog. I video. It's a culture of narcissism, what I call digital narcissism, but my idea isn't very original. It's masturbation, intellectually perhaps, and of course it goes beyond that. Sometimes there's more than just intellectual masturbation on the internet, especially when you go to places like Second Life. For me, the great Democrat, the way to become a citizen is to learn about the world. And one does not learn about the world from self-expression. One learns about the world from listening to experts, whether they're journalists or intellectuals.
I'm a meritocrat. I believe that people who are skilled and have worked hard to achieve things should be rewarded for that, whether they've worked hard as a journalist or as a filmmaker or as a record producer. I don't believe in the concept of genius. I don't believe that, most journalists or record producers or music artists are born. They're made by media. They're made by education and experience. And I don't have any great interest or love in kids who express themselves on the internet. I think 99% of them have nothing to say. said, that makes me an elitist. I am one.
First of all, I think the roots of the internet actually go back to academia and people sharing things in universities. So the roots of the internet in the 1960s are in many ways very collective and communal. But deeper than that, actually, I think the history of innovation is often about communities innovating together, whether it's steam engines in Cornwall or it's scientists innovating new ways of understanding genetics. And so actually what we're uncovering in a way is the kind of deeper collective roots of creativity, which the web is now allowing us to exploit at mass scale. And so lots of the stuff that we do on the web, peer-to-peer, is not new. Scientists have been working peer-to-peer for ages. It just happens that now on the internet we can do that at much greater scale and many more people can take part.
That's just a quick clip from The Truth About Wikipedia, an interesting, about 45-minute long television documentary out of the Netherlands from their show Backlight. You can watch the entire thing. It's up on YouTube. The Truth According to Wikipedia. Oh, I believe I've been saying The Truth About Wikipedia. The Truth According to Wikipedia is the title. My apologies. We note a flashback at the bottom, back to August of 2007 on MediaMonarchy.com, asking the question, who's editing Wikipedia? The answer is Diebold, the CIA, and Walmart. My friends, that's going to do it for this relatively quickie B-side of episode 122 for MediaMonarchy.com. Stick around for episode 123 here on May 15th, 2009. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com, coming to you live from the studios of the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, reminding you to get active or get radioactive. Take care.
How would you explain it?
Combining music and stylized images.
It's all remote control.
Each one of those images was electronically based.
Say out on my threat.
And that concludes our program for tonight. Yep.
This could really catch on.
I can't remember when I've been so moved.